Thousands of adults locally with intellectual and developmental disabilities could be at risk for housing insecurity. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss housing options available to those adults are Empower Me Living co-founder and president Emily Kendall, St. Joe's Cincinnati president and CEO Dan Connors, and founder and CEO of First Place Global, Denise Resnick. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
It's great to be here.
Hello.
Emily, your company commissioned a study that estimates more than 46,000 people with autism and/or intellectual or developmental disabilities live in Greater Cincinnati. Why did you commission this study that looked at the housing needs of those people?
So my husband and I have a six-year-old son, Luke, that has Down syndrome, and we both have backgrounds in commercial construction and commercial real estate. And as parents, we think a lot about what Luke's future will look like, and we started looking around at what housing could look like, and we realized that there were very few options. And having the backgrounds that we do, we decided to go out and look at what data was available to inform decisions about our business and what to build. And we realized that it didn't exist. And enter First Place Global Leadership Institute, who has a seminal report called A Place in the World. And in their first publication of that report, there is a paper that looks at the gaps in federal housing policy for adults with IDD when it comes to housing. And a big driver of those policy gaps are because of lack of data. So we realized that if we really wanted to understand the scope of this and deliver housing solutions that people want and need, we are going to have to go out and get it ourselves. And that led us to partner with First Place to execute this research.
And Emily, First Place found that more than 12,000 of the people we talked about who have either autism or IDD are adults who live with caregivers who are 60 years old or older. What does that mean for them? What kind of risks does that pose?
Well, I think the biggest ultimate risk is homelessness. It's estimated that 30 to 40% of our homeless population likely has some type of intellectual and/or developmental disability, something that I didn't realize until we got into this work. And loss of primary caregiver is the biggest driver that causes homelessness. So we could be in a situation where our fellow Cincinnatians are facing not only mental and physical health challenges due to the loss of a primary caregiver and then being put into the next available bed type of a placement when the caregiver can no longer provide care or passes away. And then there's a huge fiscal cost to our entire system for that I don't think that people think about. If you look at those 12,000 adults, let's take 30% of those people could end up becoming homeless. It costs our system about $35,000 a year per person to help manage somebody that is chronically homeless. Okay, so let's do that math. $35,000, a potential 3,600 people, that's $126 million. Mm. That's a huge number. That is 19 miles worth of $1 bills stacked on top of each other. That's the kind of fiscal cost of potentially doing nothing. Mm. So that's why we are here today.
Yeah. Well, and we will get into the study more, but Dan, first I want to ask you, St. Joe's operates housing for adults in this population. What kinds of options do you all have?
Yeah, so St. Joe's has been around in Cincinnati for a long time. We were founded by the Sisters of Charity of Cincinnati, who are a congregation of religious women, and their goal was to create opportunities for people who were on the margins and who did not have other opportunities. So as such, we tend to specialize in individuals who have complex needs. Historically, many times that has meant complex medical needs. So for example, we are the only housing option besides at home with a family, for example, in Cincinnati, for an individual that has a ventilator dependent, which is a very unique set of circumstances. So we offer housing, we also offer day programming, and then we offer respite services, which are temporary housing for individuals who are either where they're living with their families and they need a break, you know, their caregivers need a break, or we also have a unique partnership with the Hamilton County Board of Developmental Disabilities called Alice House, which serves some of those folks that Emily was talking about who have a temporary housing crisis. And that can be for a lot of reasons. So we have kind of a facility based, and that's for folks who are very medical. So at that primary facility, which is in Sharonville, there are 48 individuals who live there. You know, we employ a workforce of 60 nurses, you know, very, very heavy medical complexity. We also have community living in small houses for folks who don't need as quite as an intense level. And again, we have those 16 beds of respite, which are in two different locations, and then day programming in Sharonville and Blue Ash as well.
And when it comes to the housing that St. Joe's offers, is your housing typically at capacity? I mean, it sounds like you don't have hundreds and hundreds of options available. Do you have a lot of openings, or are people itching to get in there?
We have no openings, unfortunately, and that speaks to kind of why we're having this conversation. All of our beds we may have an opening temporarily for an individual, and sadly, because of the nature of the individuals we serve, sometimes that can mean an individual passes away just from the complexity of their medical condition. But that bed is going to be filled fairly quickly. And it doesn't nearly meet the need that Cincinnatians have.
Denise, what do you see nationally? I mean, your organization did this big study that Emily referenced earlier. What do you see nationally in terms of the need for this kind of housing and the difficulty in finding it for families and adults who need it?
It is pervasive. Emily was citing the 12,000 adults with intellectual developmental disabilities living with aging caregivers over the age of 60 in Cincinnati alone. The national number is 1.3 million Americans living with caregivers, with moms, dads, family members over the age of 60. And for me, as a fellow parent, the looming question for us is who's going to care about them when we're no longer able to do so? And parents with professional backgrounds, professionals are galvanizing themselves around answering that question. What can we do to develop more housing and community options where people live, where our loved ones know their communities and where the community knows them? And I love that Dan is joining us today from St. Joseph's, and it is what Emily and her husband, Mark, have done to galvanize their community through Empower Me Living and identify those local leaders and stakeholders to rally around this effort and to begin with what is most important, and that is understanding the population we need to serve. Here in Phoenix, Arizona, where our son, Matt, who lives with autism, lives, and in communities across the country. And to date, we have facilitated 12 studies, and very proud that Empower Me Living represents the largest segment for the Down syndrome population that has been studied yet.
Denise, why is there such a lack of housing for adults who need this kind of housing? Is it a funding problem? What are the barriers to creating more of this housing?
Funding is a big part of it, and we also must recognize that what we're experiencing, communities across the country are experiencing when we talk about today's housing crisis. The housing crisis, as Emily was acknowledging, is also represented through people living with intellectual and developmental disabilities and people living who have been or have not been diagnosed with autism. And when you look at autism as an example alone, when our son was diagnosed 3 decades ago, the incidence was 1 in 2,500. Today, 1 in 31 children with autism are being diagnosed. 1 in 31 children are being diagnosed with autism. And just that segment alone, that represents about 120,000 children with autism alone transitioning to adulthood each year. And these are kids who are benefiting from early identification, early intervention, early education. And these are kids, including those with Down syndrome, who have had much better care in terms of medical and health care and recognizing the potential of individuals. And what's happening is once they graduate from school, there is a road to nowhere, a road to displacement, and sadly to homelessness. We are not prepared for the adults who are transitioning today and also the adults among us living with autism and intellectual and developmental disabilities.
We're talking about the housing options available locally for adults with autism or intellectual or developmental disabilities. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Emily, another, you know, thing that stands out about your study, Denise just mentioned that it really delves into the needs of people with Down syndrome, which is great, but it also asked people who have autism or intellectual or developmental disabilities what kind of housing they want, what their preferences are. What did you hear from them?
Great. Thank you. I'm very excited that we were able to give people an opportunity to express their wants and desires and needs. So 54% want to live in a mixed-use, neuro-inclusive community. Think Summit Park up in Blue Ash, but with features that are specifically designed to welcome and include people with IDD, like visual wayfinding signage, universal design features like door handles that are levers that really anyone can use a lever. My three-year-old all the way up until my 76-year-old dad can operate a lever on a door. So think communities like that. 43% said they wanted to live in a planned community. Think about a neighborhood or an apartment building around a core of recreational amenities like a swimming pool and tennis courts. What's really important to them, they expressed through the survey, they want to have community life. They want someone to help them navigate accessing their communities. They want to have opportunities to be social and have planned social activities and get access to their communities through transportation and other methods. And they want in their homes easy to clean features. Security and safety features ranked as number two, top desirable physical amenities. Adaptable design features like those levers, and smart home features using technology like Alexa and Google Home and Siri. Hopefully she doesn't turn on right now. You said that. Their phone's in the room. But those are the types of features that people want to see, you know, and being just like all of us, we want to be close to the grocery store and restaurants and walking paths and the gym. So those are some of the needs that were and desires that were expressed in our research.
Yeah. Sounds like what a lot of us want and need in the places where we live. Well, we are going to continue our conversation after a short break and later in the program. Can you imagine heating your home with the power it takes to operate a hairdryer? We'll discuss passive house design. This is Cincinnati Edition. We believe WVXU is a vital part of our community. If you place your trust in this station, please donate at wvxu.org. Or call 513-419-7155. And you can join me for a live Cincinnati Edition politics show at 8 p.m. Wednesday at our new building in Evanston. It's free, but only a few spots are left. RSVP now on our website, wvxu.org. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about housing options locally for adults with autism or intellectual or developmental disabilities. My guests are Empower Me Living, co-founder and president, Emily Kendall, St. Joe's Cincinnati, president and CEO, Dan Connors, and founder and CEO of First Place Global, Denise Resnick. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Emily, you mentioned earlier you're not only a developer, you're also the mother of a son with Down syndrome and a daughter with cerebral palsy. When you think about the future for your children, what housing options do you want to have for them?
Well, I think about how do we put them in the driver's seat of being part of the planning process. And I think it could be all kinds of things. Like for my son, Luke, he's very independent and he likes to have his own space. Could that be a micro home that's an accessory dwelling unit in our backyard? And maybe his sister lives in the house. That's her plan with 10 kids and 10 cats. So I said, I'll be out of there.
Yeah.
But you can have it. I really want them to be involved in what that looks like and to do it as a family. And it's not a one-size-fits-all solution. That's why, again, when we looked at how we were going to get this data, first place, the way that they do it, making sure that input is gathered and received directly from individuals and families, was so important to us. So we want Luke to be in the driver's seat of what his future looks like. But we need to start now. The current landscape, Denise said it earlier, of how things are getting done is not moving the needle, and we need bold action.
Well, you just mentioned micro homes. Your company is working on a development that would offer home ownership options. Talk to us just a little bit about that.
Yes, this is really important for several reasons. We have a wonderful partner, Inclusive Housing Resources, that is our nonprofit partner on this project up in Oxford, and the city of Oxford has been really good to work with on this. 36% of our survey respondents said that they would be interested in home ownership. Home ownership is important because it is a protected asset. So for individuals that rely on means-tested government income streams, there's an asset limit. They can't have more than $2,000 worth of assets to their name. But a home is a protected asset, and it's a long-term aging-in-place solution. So that is why we're really excited to bring that option to Oxford.
Yeah. Dan, you referenced this earlier when you were talking about the different options that St. Joe's has, but there are lots of people who have more than one disability, more complex health needs. Talk a little bit more about what housing for those adults needs to have.
Yeah, I think that's the absolute important question. And I think there's a couple of things that are happening within the population of individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And all of them speak to this need for more options. And essentially, individuals with developmental disabilities are becoming more complex in their needs. And it's part of that is what Denise referenced earlier is individuals on the autism spectrum and that increase and the fact that a lot of those have co-occurring behavioral needs where they need unique kinds of support. There's also individuals with complex medical needs, and that's one of the fastest growing populations right now. And that's because medical technology is getting good and it's solving a lot of problems, but then it's creating a lot of people with complex needs. And then on a positive note, individuals with developmental disabilities are living far more longer and productive lives than they did before. And that's great news, right? We want that. But what that creates is issues across the lifespan of the kind of supports that someone might need. So someone might, you know, in their 20s and 30s and 40s, not need a whole lot of supports, such as a nurse or medical supports. But then just like all of us, again, you referenced earlier, this isn't different than we all face, which is as we age, we might need more complex needs. So all of that speaks to, in my opinion, the need for a greater diversity of housing options. That there, as Emily said earlier, there isn't a one-size-fits-all option we need because their needs don't fit that, you know, and their needs are changing. So some individuals need nursing. They might even need daily nursing, but they don't need a lot of nursing, but they need it every day. That creates a lot of stresses to what's currently offered to folks where nursing is one of the biggest challenges. Of course, there are workforce issues too, which we could talk longer than we have time for around nursing. So we need models that can look at efficiencies of that nursing. That's just one example, but I would say there needs to be a diversity of models, and those models need to think about a vastly more diverse need than individuals maybe 20 years ago that we were experiencing. Yeah.
Denise, there are so many recommendations in this study, and we do have a link to the study on our website, wvxu.org, for anybody who wants to really dig into it. But talk with us, Denise, about some of the study's recommendations and what it's going to take for communities to have more of these housing options.
It takes leveraging what we have in our respective communities and states. And it is our interest and our aim through First Place Global that we fuel this new wave of housing and community options for this population. And Dan, I'm so glad that you represented the high need, high support individual. And that is represented in the third edition of A Place in the World, the study that we just updated and released this month for those with complex need with profound autism. What it's going to take to fuel this wave is tri-sector collaboration. It is not going to happen on the backs of government alone with their dwindling resources and the increased population. It requires charitable interest to give nonprofit groups like ours a chance to succeed and push the envelope to understand what is possible. How can we reimagine housing for this population? And it will take the private sector jumping in to help us advance this interest. And we have great examples of that when you look at senior housing. My first employer out of college was Del Webb Corporation. 65 years ago, they created the granddaddy of senior housing called Sun City. And fast forward today, you think about all these different price points and locations and amenities and services, because the fact that I'm a senior doesn't tell you what I want in my housing, and neither does Luke's Down syndrome or my son's autism. So truly, what we are trying to do is to create more choice in Cincinnati, in Phoenix, and in communities everywhere. And that's going to take us working together to capture this important data and to understand what you can do in Cincinnati, what you can do in Ohio that will be unique to you and that we will all be able to learn from.
Dan, there are some other housing providers in Greater Cincinnati. I'm thinking of LAD and the smart homes that that organization operates. How much more of this kind of housing do you think Greater Cincinnati needs?
Well, first of all, yes, we have a lot of good colleagues and other partners who do this in this area. I think of Ohio Valley Residential Services, LAD, Envision, and you know, in numbers of other. I'm not naming them all. I don't want to exclude somebody. But each of them covers a different niche. But I think the biggest challenge is that all of them are in the same boat that I'm in, which is there's limited ability to grow that, as Denise said. The way we're structured in our funding, it can be hard for capital investment and to develop new options. And what we know is not only are the existing individuals that we have needing more, but there's this wave that's coming. There's the wave of children who are, you know, many on the autism spectrum who are entering into adulthood and need that. There's these medically complex kids who are entering adult and need services. And then there's these folks who are living with an aging caregiver, which no one even really knows how many are out there, but we know there are a lot. So I would say the need is, and I don't want to be, you know, hyperbolic, but the need is pretty dramatic. And we all are poised to meet that need, but we really have to think hard about the models that we offer and about the ways that we fund and develop those models so that we can meet that need for individuals. And we don't have, as Emily mentioned earlier, a lot of individuals who with developmental disabilities who are in unhoused situations or other things like that.
Emily, you're clearly passionate about this from a number of different perspectives. What do you hope will happen as a result of this study?
Well, first of all, thank you for having us on today, Lucy, because one of the things that I hope is to raise awareness. When I was looking at the broader affordable housing conversation in Greater Cincinnati, the IDD population is not represented. And that's nobody's fault. It's an awareness issue. So I invite people that are involved in affordable housing and shaping that in our region, whether you're in civic leadership or nonprofit or the private sector, like Denise said, it's a working group of three musketeers coming together to please take a look at our study and our research and how can we work together to prioritize including people with IDD in those conversations and considerations. For us, we will use it to inform our business decisions when we look at designing our physical spaces and our supportive programming. And then for our fellow Cincinnatians, I invite you to come be involved and be a part of our mission and make a new friend. Put down your phone, get off the doom scroll, and come be with people who are fully present, who are not looking to get something out of you or coming at you with an angle, but appreciate you for who you are, how you are. It is really a magical experience. So I invite everybody to come check out and get involved in what we're doing.
Well, I've been talking with Empower Me Living co-founder and president, Emily Kendall, St. Joe's Cincinnati president and CEO, Dan Connors, and founder and CEO of First Place Global, Denise Resnick. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you
for the privilege.
Up next, can you imagine heating your home with the power it takes to operate a hairdryer? We'll hear about passive house design. This is Cincinnati Edition.